Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, November 9th, 2016, and this is day three of my week-long series of interviews with authors, and today I have with me John Forrest. How are you, John?
Doing great. Thank you. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great, and thank you for being here. I wanted to have you here today because you are an author that I know personally, and you have been published in magazines and books, and published in books. You're a published author.
Yes, I am.
And I just thought that it would be really cool to talk with you today about your process and the things you've written and maybe what you have in store.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. But before we do that, we have a sponsor, so I need to talk about our sponsor real quick. And our sponsor is Casper Mattresses, and I'm really pleased that they are sponsoring the show, because I've been a Casper user for quite a while, and I am so pleased with my mattress. I like that they've designed a mattress that uses all the right materials in all the right mixes, so that you get a bed that supports you the way you need, but is flexible and pliable enough that it doesn't feel like you're sleeping on a board. Or if you happen to do other things in addition to sleep in your bed, it's comfortable as well. It doesn't get too hot in the summer, and it's just like an all-around great bed. I love that that you don't have to pay as much for their mattresses. Mine is a queen size, and it's an $850 mattress. And the reason the cost can be so much lower than a comparable mattress, which could easily be well over $1,000, is because they have their own facility where they're making and then shipping everything. There's no showroom, so they can keep costs down. And then when you order your mattress, no problem. They ship it to you in a box that I am certain is Time Lord technology, because the box is far too small for the mattress that comes out of it. So I really believe that they are bigger on the inside. And it's actually kind of cool when you pull the mattress out and it just magically expands out in this awesome way to become your new bed. Pretty much 5 minutes after your mattress is delivered, you can have it set up and start taking a nap. It's a wonderful thing. So what you guys need to do is get one. And the way you want to do that is by going to the Casper website. So go to casper.com/TDO, and then use the discount code TDO, and that's going to get you $50 off a mattress. And they ship these right to your door, no extra charge. So if you were to get, say, the queen size mattress like I have, $800, beautiful, new, incredibly comfortable mattress delivered right to your door. And like I've said before, mine has actually helped improve my sleep patterns. And that's saying a lot, because I have serious sleep issues, and Casper has done a lot to help me improve that. So head to their website, casper.com/TDO. Use the discount code TDO and get $50 off your mattress. Thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor today. Okay, so John, we should talk about books and writing. And I gave just a quick overview, a very quick overview of what you've done. Did you want to elaborate on any of that for me?
Well, sure. For quite a long time, I've been, I usually describe myself as a writer of speculative fiction. And what that really means to most folks is science fiction. And I prefer speculative, because I think science fiction is becoming something that's more real every day. We often hear these cliches that technology is speeding up and it's becoming more and more part of our lives every day, and things that we see in science fiction movies sometimes seem out of date by the time they're released, because in many ways those technologies are already advancing and becoming real around us all the time. So speculative for me encompasses a much broader idea of what science fiction is, and the ways that it talks about not just the science and the technology, but the ways that our societies are changing and what they might be in the future.
Okay, cool. All right, and I'm going to get the technology stuff out of the way right away, just because I'm interested. So I wrote a book for graphic designers several years ago, and when I did that, the tools that worked best for me, I was using a MacBook Pro. I used Omni Outliner to actually write pretty much all of the book, and did some editing afterwards in BB Edit, and then eventually ended up in Word because that's what the publisher needed. But that was a while ago, and I know tools have improved a lot. I'm curious, what are you using to write?
Yeah, so it's definitely a mix. My process is a little bit weird. In some ways, for a science fiction writer, I begin in very non-technological ways. It's not uncommon at all for me to carry around a small notebook and a pen and paper. And oftentimes the first draft, particularly of short work, is done longhand. But now that we've got that out of the way, I use a program called Scrivener, which is already in many ways quite popular amongst a certain subset of writers. So I do almost all my initial entry in Scrivener. It gets organized there. It will organize me for all of the different outputs that I need. So everything from Kindle, which uses its own proprietary Mobi form, and then all of the other online or mobile book versions, PDF. And then oftentimes, depending on the publisher, so when I'm working with more mainline or traditional publishers, just as you said, Jeff, it's still not uncommon for them to request either a rich text file or a Microsoft Word doc, but I export to those too. So Scrivener has become kind of my go-to program.
You're not the only person I've talked to over the past couple of years that thinks Scrivener's the bomb.
Yeah, it's the bee's knees.
Yeah, you know, and Brian Chaffin, he is one of the Mac Observer co-founders, and he's a Scrivener user, and he actually uses the term the bee's knees to describe the app.
Well, darn, I was like being first to something, but that doesn't happen when we use cliches like bee's knees.
Well, I think it puts you in a very elite circle of people that actually know how to properly use the term bee's knees.
Excellent. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. Now, so you've written for established publishers.
Mm-hmm.
You've written for magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you still have a mix of those things going. But you've also gotten involved in some publishing of your own, right?
Yeah. So I think I've kind of done the full spectrum of writing for different sizes and different styles of output. So what I mean by that is, for example, last month I had a story called Progenesis, which was published by an imprint of Random House, so Penguin Random House, and that's analog science fiction in fact. And they're the longest running, still surviving science fiction periodical out there. So, you know, there's kind of that end of the spectrum. And also little independent publishers, award-winning publishers like Cross Genres, which was a shop literally run by two folks. And unfortunately, they've now closed their doors, but they were winning Hugo and Nebula Awards with their publications. And yeah, at the smaller end of the spectrum, I've been involved in a little co-op publisher that's really just me and a few other folks called Robot Cowgirl Press, which was centered here in Colorado.
Oh,
so I've kind of done the whole spectrum at this point.
You know, I'm actually familiar with Robot Cowgirl Press because I have a copy of one of your books, Requiem Dawn.
Yeah, that would be one of them.
And yeah, that was Robot Cowgirl. And I just, you know, I'm not all the way through it yet because I've been very busy, but I am enjoying it.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So do you have any of your stories that are like stand out for you that we should point people to, like if they're not familiar with your work?
Well, yeah. So, probably sometime January, February, there'll be a second collection of my short stories coming out. And that'll be called Minuscule Truths. That will also be by Robot Cowgirl Press. The production time on these is slowing down because more of my stories are being picked up in other primary markets. And oftentimes there's a pretty significant delay before the secondary rights revert back to the author. So it takes me a little while to get collections together. And I like those collections to be of stories which have had some other life somewhere else first. But there's one story, it's another piece that Analog picked up first, that's called Sentience Signified, and it was published in the May issue last year, I think. And the reason why that's a standout is because it was originally a Valentine's Day present to my wife. She had asked me for a Valentine's Day present that was something that we made. Well, I'm a writer, so I guess I'm going to make a story.
Sure.
Yeah. She said, write me a love story. And what she got was a really bizarre kind of love story of nature 24 light years from here.
Nice.
Yeah. So, it ended up being something probably completely different than what she was expecting. But she enjoyed it, and the publishers enjoyed it enough to pick it up. And that one's a standout. It will actually be reprinted by Robot Cowgirl as Sapience Signified, because ultimately I decided that Sapience actually described the condition that I was dealing with more than the word sentience. So it goes through a title change. But look for that one. And Minuscule Truths, which will be that collection coming out probably January or February.
Hold on, I'm writing that one down because I want to make sure that it ends up in today's show notes. Minuscule Truths. Okay, got it. Okay, yeah. Now, I know you write a lot because I see you talking a lot about what you're working on and how many words you've cranked out in a day. Uh-huh. And sometimes you're talking about how you're having trouble like pushing through whatever it is that you're trying to create. And so once you've got all of this together, I mean, the idea is you want to share it with other people. So you've done or are doing pieces that end up in magazines. There's Robot Cowgirl Press. You work with other publishers. Do you work with agents at all?
You know, I don't have an agent, and there have been periods of time where I've had conversations with listed agents who, you know, maybe those conversations would have led forward to a representation agreement, and either it hasn't felt like the right time for me, or I run into the same thing that every other writer does, which is that sometimes when I feel like a good agent representation would have been nicely timed, the agents are busy too. You know, there are only a relatively small number of agents in the country who are really representing at a high professional level. And the rest of them, I would advise other authors to avoid. Like, you know, really vet your agents before you move down the road of developing one of those relationships. So, yeah, it just hasn't been the right timing yet for agents.
Okay. And then, since you're not really working with agents... No, I said that wrong. Since you're not working with agents, that means that if you want a book to get picked up by a publisher, you're having to pitch directly to the publishers yourself. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
How does that work?
Well, in some ways it doesn't work. So, you know, every author who aspires to have a novel published should understand that an awful lot of sort of the big five publishers and all of their imprints, they're not necessarily going to look, in fact, some of them most explicitly will not look at work that's not presented by an agent. They only maintain their relationships with the agents. But there are opportunities around that. So authors who are wondering how to get their work out there should also consider going to writers' conferences, conventions, Worldcon, which is a big one for science fiction writers and fantasy writers. That's where the Hugo Awards are given out. Those are places where oftentimes editors and agents are there for the express purpose of meeting authors and having those conversations and being open. Whereas, you know, the other 364 days of the year, they're probably not quite so open to having those conversations. So that's one way around it. And then the other way around is there are some major publishers significant, you know, top five, or, you know, imprints at the top five that are still open. But just check on a case by case basis. That's one way. And then, while I haven't done it, there's a lot of my peers here in Colorado who are with, say, mid-size publishers, and are very happy with those relationships. So, you know, everyone's mileage might vary.
I'm assuming that if you're with, say, a mid-sized publisher, that doesn't have the same significance as it would have, say, 20 years ago, because there's so many new potential avenues for publication that just weren't available back then, like Amazon, Kindle, or publishing through Apple's iBooks store, where you don't have to have the overhead that goes along with actually printing physical books.
Yeah, that might be true. Although I think it might also be fair to say that some of the best of these mid-sized publishers, the ones who are still independent, but they're so that they're not an imprint of one of the big five, but they're also not where I'd say Robot Cowgirl Press. We're really a boutique, and we're a co-op that's encompassing a relatively small number of authors. There's a range that's kind of in between those, where these mid-size houses might be taking advantage of some print-on-demand options. You know, they're not necessarily warehousing books, and the value that they're providing, and I believe the way that they've really worked out how they fit in the publishing ecosystem, is they do provide value and a kind of bulk rate of cost in editing. They might understand book art and book marketing in ways that authors don't. And that can be really important, because I can tell you this, just putting a book together, no matter how good a job you do at it, just putting a book together, writing the book, and throwing it up on the iBook store and on Amazon, that's not a path to success for 99% of writers. Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke yesterday with David Sparks, who is, he's known in the Apple community and in the podcasting community. And he is one of the few people I know that falls into that 1%, where he's been able to make the move to self-publishing through the iBook store and have success with it. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that actually supports what you're saying, because it's not many people that can have the success that David's having in that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what outlets like Amazon, CreateSpace, the iBook store, what those do is they give authors one more tool for distributing and getting those books out there. To some extent, all of those sorts of services do offer ways that authors can market themselves. They offer programs and incentives for authors and for buyers. That's all true. But it always seems to me that those authors who really succeed in that self-publishing model are very good at understanding their market. They've developed their own sort of methods for getting past the threshold of, say, selling 2,000 or so copies. And they've got that worked out. But yeah, it really is the small portion of those authors who are just doing self-publishing who make that work.
All right. So we are almost out of time. So I'm going to throw a two-prong question at you.
Great.
First, if a movie studio came to you and said, hey, we really like this story, we want to make a movie, would you be open to that? And then second, if so, which of your stories would you want them to turn into a movie?
Well, that's a fantastic question. The answer to the first question in the most immediate sense is yes, of course I would be open to it. But at that point, then I would probably want some serious representation, because that is definitely a bridge that can go very well, or it can sort of collapse under your feet as you go through the process. So that would be a case where I would really seek an agent and a good agent before I was proceeding. And then which story would I most want to see turned into a film? Well, the Requiem books, of which, by the way, there is a second one in progress. And in fact, I had a little meeting in New York a month ago with an artist who might be working with me on kind of reconceiving the covers for those books and developing that. But the Requiem books, it would be nice to see those as a film. And I think we might have, we might even be entering an era where that kind of story could make its way to film. Whereas 5 years ago, I would have said no way. However, short stories often make the best movies. And if I was going to pick one of my short stories, there's one called The Unlighted Sentinel, which I think would make a great film. And it's about a bunch of folks who are trapped on a space station far, far distant from Earth. And they're completely cut off, and nobody's going to come save them. And in fact, they're there for generations. So instead of it being the station, it becomes the whole world to the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the original people who were trapped on it. And it's grim and bleak and really disturbing, and it would make a great movie.
I know, I'm intrigued right now. As soon as you, I was already in, but you totally had me hooked at Grim and Bleak.
Grim and Bleak.
A Grim and Bleak extended time family story.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, we are out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up.
Great.
And, you know, the thing is, when I do interviews like this, they go by so fast, and I always wish they were longer, but I have the show length, and so we've hit the end. John, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Now, are there any places online you would like to send people to learn more about you?
How about my website, jlforrest.com? That's with two R's.
That sounds like a good place to send people. Cool. All right. And like I said, thank you for being here. It's been really fun chatting.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
And Casper, thank you for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, casper.com/TDO. Use the discount code TDO and get yourself $50 off a killer mattress. I really do love mine. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.